We have a couple of thousands of CV in waiting list to come and work with us.
Ja, meine Lieben, heute mit the one and only Massimo Bottura. Who has his birthday today?
Birthday, it's my birthday. Yeah. I'm very happy actually to celebrate here my birthday with you guys. I gave my words to come back here, and my words, it's my health, and I'm here, and actually, hugging Rene,
we just met Rene Redzepi in the other room.
We are all so busy. My God, it was very good. Feels amazing to see old friends.
Yes.
You know.
Let's talk about this in a couple of seconds. We start with a little word rap with small answers from you. The Beatles or the Rolling Stones?
No, Rolling Stones.
Sure.
The Rolling Stones, they were rebels. Beatles, they were like...
For the nice ones.
Yeah. Well, the nice ones.
Ice cream or sorbet?
Ice cream or sorbet? Probably sorbet. More pure.
The Alps or the sea?
Oh, that's a good question. I think the valley, the Pianura Padana, is in the middle. It's not one, it's the other, but where I live. I have a little short story. I was shooting a video with David Beckham and about Maserati and the cars. And we were taking a break and we were lying on a bench, close to the countryside in Casa Maria Luisa with all these beautiful roses, the wheat that was almost gold, and out of the blue he said to me, Massimo? I said, yes, David. He said, Massimo, I think this is paradise. I said, paradise? This is the countryside. No, I think this is, if I think about paradise, I imagine paradise like this. So if David Beckham can, think about Emilia-Romagna flatland, valley as a paradise, I say, oh my God, I'm losing myself in the everyday life. And I don't see the reality of where we stay, So that's why I answered like that.
This is why it was the perfect answer, actually, to this question. Butter or olive oil?
Olive oil.
A QR code menu. A QR code on the menu. So you have to scan it with your phone to see the menu. And yes or no?
Yes or no? If there are places that... where you have to do it, but not in my restaurants.
No. Getting up early or
late night?
Get to sleep late.
Late night. Late night. Okay. During pandemic.
Yeah.
When we were there, our family was split in two. My wife and Charlie, my son, they were like very early. They were up very early. And me and Alexa, my daughter, we were up very late in the evening. So we were like,
okay, it was the team, two teams.
Yeah.
Ananas on a pizza, yes or no?
Ananas in a pizza. I'm always an open mind and I don't care. Depends who's putting ananas and pineapple on the pizza, because and depends what kind of pizza. So pizza, I see pizza as a very open canvas in which you can paint whatever you want, not just tomato, mozzarella, basil. So it could be, why not?
So why not? If it's well done, if it's okay. Fast cars or fast motorcycles?
This is a very tricky question. Oh my God.
I know, it's specifically prepared
for
you.
I know why you ask me that. You know, in 35 kilometers in Modena, we have all the best cars and motorcycle in the world. So to me, picking one or the other is difficult. But if I'm by myself, I'm down and out, and I want to restore my balance, I put an helmet. I wear an helmet and, you know, I get my motorcycle. I drive up on the hills south of Modena. 1 hour, I'm back, and I'm completely brand new.
Yeah.
So the adrenaline of motorcycle, it's incredible.
It's a little bit more.
Yeah.
Last one, balsamico or parmigiano?
No, this is impossible. This is impossible because in my vein, there's balsamic vinegar that runs since I am a kid, but all my muscles are made by the protein of Parmigiano Reggiano, you know? This is like impossible to choose.
So this is the only exception we make. Usually
perfect.
Everybody has to choose. This is the only exception we make.
Thank you.
We were speaking about your birthday, but I think there is another sort of birthday.
But you know, I have to say, I'm at one point of my life in which I have the privilege to say and decide what to do and where I can spend my time with. And I'm here today with you guys because you deserve it. And that's why I'm, it's my birthday or not, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You know, I decide to stay here and to spend time with you, and I'm here in my birthday. So this is the privilege that I get.
We feel honored, and thanks so much for that, because it means a lot.
But you deserve
also for all the public which is awaiting. And I was also mentioning this because there is sort of an anniversary as well in my mind when I speak to you today. This year marks 30 years of Osteria Francescana.
Yeah,
right.
30 years.
Is how crazy sounds it? Does it sound for you?
But it's a long, long journey. We did so much. And
1995.
Yeah, 95. I opened this restaurant after a couple of years of restoration. Mm-hmm. It was like disaster that time. It was a very old place, you know, and is there since 1867, something like that. Mm-hmm. So it was a very small restaurant with big dreams in a very narrow street in Modena.
The small and restaurants with big dreams.
Yeah, and in this, and you from the door, you don't even see the big tower, bell tower, you know. But what we had culture as a landscape of ideas. So we could imagine everything, you know. We could shape everything. And that's what we were following, and we were, you know, it always been, you know, our primal thing. You know, if you ask me what you do every day in Osteria, you know, I'm answering. I compress my passion into edible bites, sitting on centuries of histories, because my cuisine is deeply Italian, but filtered by a contemporary mind. So this is what really was the moment, the very difficult moment in the beginnings, very difficult years, not moments, years. You know, I opened in 95, and we were really discussing the tradition of Italian cuisine, and people in Italy weren't ready to listen to that.
People were saying you're deconstructing the Italian.
No, I don't think so.
It's something.
I think what I did, I look at the past in a very critic way and get the best from the past into the future to renew tradition. Who were talking about a lasagna? You know, lasagna is a plate for, you know, emigrants or like, you know, you find a big pan of lasagna everywhere in the corner in Southeast Asia or Buenos Aires, I don't know. And but when I reflected and I start thinking about that in a deeper way, I was fishing into my youthness as a kid. You know, Picasso was always saying, the big artist, no? That was always saying, you know, I was drawing as Raffaello since I was 13 and it took the whole life to paint like a kid. Yeah, I cook like a kid. And so my the when I was a kid, when my grandmother was bringing like Sunday lunch, the big pan of the lasagna, what we were doing, we were fighting, me and my older brother, over the crunchy part of the lasagna.
Crunchy part.
Because the crunchy part was the best part. So we rebuild the crunchy part of the lasagna. And that's the beginning of the renaissance of lasagna. So
this was something you tried to merge, this very intimate perception of a well-established cuisine, which with a broader culture.
Yeah.
Right?
I think
this is what made Osteria
unique.
Famous.
Yeah. I think it's a unique place, you know, in the world. You know, there's no one else who takes this kind of decision in their own country. Because I have a lot of friends in our gastronomic, in the culinary world. I think about Himanshu in Dubai, or I think about, you know, the guys from in New York, the the Korean, I forget the name. I'm sorry, I'm getting old. You know, it's my birthday, I'm getting old. They are like rebuilding a new Korean, new Indian cuisine. They're like two cuisine that are extremely traditional.
Yeah.
And but they're doing that outside their own country.
Oh,
because it's very difficult to do it in your own country.
Because you always have the police.
People are there to keep you down under their thumb. And that's how I did it. And that's why, you know, it took so long for me to be recognized. I couldn't.
Were you
confronted
a lot with like criticism from Italians?
I was the classic guy to be crucified in the main piazza, you know, because I was screwing up with the tortellini or like the tagliatelle or like the nostalgic cuisine, you know. Modena is the heart of the food valley, you know. We have more DOP and EGP product than any other state in the Western world. Yeah. Just Emilia, you know, between Bologna, Modena and Parma and Reggio. And this is like incredible. And we cannot touch it. We cannot win. So, you know, there was like a friend of mine that was like a great chef. He was invited at the Identità di Fuoco in Modena, you know, and we were talking about. He was discussing with all these international journalists, and he said, "Ah, oh, Massimo, I was first time I was heard about Massimo was 1997, 1998. I was working at El Bulli, and in the kitchen of El Bulli, we were talking about the most avant-garde people and what they were doing. And, you know, they were talking about Massimo and how, you know, he was like screwing up with Italian cuisine and create this incredible talk and disrupted the things. And, you know, but and also we were adding, you know, but we have to go very quick. And because at the end of the year, he's going to close the restaurant for sure because no one goes. Yeah. In the kitchen of El Bulli in 98, they were talking like that, you know, and I'm still here. Can you believe that?
But was it that empty, the restaurant, back
in
the
empty, in
98?
Pretty much, yeah.
3 years
95,
after
96, 97, 98, 99, 2000. Then in the middle of 2000, probably May, you know, there was this big car accident, and the most important gastronomic critic in Italy turned and he left the highway, and he came and had dinner in Modena, the restaurant. And he wrote an incredible article, and from that moment, the door were open. And
really,
you know, everything changed at the end
just
of the year.
Just his article changed?
I think it was already ready. Everything was mature. And
your style was mature, yeah, than yeah, yeah. On the opening
as well?
And that
was the moment in which, you know, that was the moment. Because Enzo Vizzari was like, writing an incredible album, saying publicly sorry not to be there before, mm-hmm. and leave me in the limbo, you know, of some inspectors that didn't know what to do, like very traditional one. Yeah. And that was the moment in which at the end of the year 2000, you know, we got the first Michelin star, we got lunch of the year, we got best young chef in Italy for Gambero Rosso, so we got so many prizes, and that's how everything changed.
So beginning of the 2000s,
yeah,
it started
25
really to,
years ago,
yeah. Today this story in my opinion is all the more interesting, or especially interesting, because there was a lot of talking the last, I don't know, 1.5 or 2 years about Italian cuisine, about the nature of Italian cuisine. There was even a book saying Italian cuisine as such doesn't exist. It's just like 50 years old, and the marketing tool, you know, the book from Alberto Grandi, I think his name.
Yeah.
How did this affect you? What were your thoughts when you realized that? Because this is sort of the deconstruction, which was quite bold,
but,
right?
Do you really think I'm listening to those stories or to those books? You know, those guys, they're selling those books. To sell those books, they say such a stupid things. Mm-hmm. You know, like everybody knows that Italian cuisine is not a codified cuisine, but is the genius of every chef. The incredible biodiversity that we have from the Alps to Sicily. Think about Sicily, it's more Africa than Africa. Think about Piemonte. Piemonte is more French than the France. And then France, you know, it's like unbelievable, you know. And, you know, that biodiversity is our very strength, our incredible, powerful tool, mm-hmm. to communicate to the world who we are. And but the things that keep us together, and that's why I hope the 10th of December in New Delhi, we're going to be recognized as a patrimonio of UNESCO. Because
really?
Is the role of and the ritual of Italian cuisine. I was talking just 1 minute ago about Sunday lunch for Italian, sitting together around the table, talking to each other, cooking as an act of love, cooking for your family, cooking for your friends. This is who we are. Mm-hmm. This is what we do. What we communicate. And, you know, it's always been like that. The Roman, they switched 2,000 years ago, the philosopher, the Greek philosopher, like, we eat to live in, we live to eat. Because they understood 2,000 years ago that, you know, around the table, they weren't around the table, they had different parties. Mm. But inviting people in their homes, having parties, stay together, they could get lobbying and, you know, vote in the Senate, because it's where the people low the barrier. Around the table, we are all equal. And that's why at the Universal Exposition in 2015 in Italy, in Milan, where the theme was Feed the Planet, Energy for Life, an Italian chef created the project Food for Soul, fighting food waste, social isolation through beauty, because just an Italian chef and in his DNA could create something like that.
You think it's specifically Italian, this approach? It couldn't just have been an Italian?
I traveled the world, and I know exactly what to expect in one place to another, you know, and I'm exposed to all the best of the best. And I know that Italian cuisine is like that. And it's Italian. Italy, everyone, René too, but every single 65 of the most influential chef in the world, they came to Milan, canceled all their project planes, and they came to Milan and cook in a refettorio for poor people. Italy, France, they passed the law against food waste inspired by us. In the White House, at the moment which President Obama and Michelle and Barack, they were there, they were like talking as, you know, talking about healthy food, talking about how to change cuisine. So it was such an impact in the world. And, you know, 10 years, because it's also the 10-year anniversary of Food for Soul, 2015-2025.
Right.
You know, I'm now advocate for the United Nations after 4 years of ambassador for United UNEP. Now I'm advocate, one of the 10 advocates of the United Nations. Can you believe that? You know,
I think this is very, very important to understand the figure of Massimo Bottura, is that you became something that went beyond the classical role of a chef.
Yeah,
we had Bocuse, which was already, you know, putting a new dimension to the figure of the chef.
Yeah.
And I think then the next shift was...
You know, I think 2015 was a big, big, big revolution moment.
Why?
It was because in that moment, we step out of our kitchen. We all went to Milan. We all unloaded the tract every day. And we all cook for kids lunchtime and... homeless people, dinner time, and we were sharing joy and happiness with them. So this is all about. Of course, we are, for us, cooking in a 3 Michelin star or in a refettorio is the same. I think about Ducasse and the 14th of July, La Prix de la Bastille in France, and what he came the 14th of July, cooking at the refettorio in Milan. It was like a big, big deal. And that's exactly why I think there's a moment in which everything changed. And that's the moment in which I start writing everywhere, cooking is an act of love. Because that's what my grandmother was saying, always saying. My grandmother, she wasn't a great cook, because she had to cook. But my mom was a great cook because she loved to cook. Mm. And when you love something, you give everything. And to me, like, cooking is like cooking, listen to music, looking at art, breathing culture, listen to poetry. These kind of things are...
This is exactly what it's also... the whole osteria is about. It's you have... In this microcosmos, you have this care for other people, but you have as well this cultural element, which you gave also even more room in the hotel
Casa Maria Luigi.
In the Casa Maria Luigi.
Yeah, call it casa because we treat everyone like home.
Yeah,
and Maria Luisa was my mom, so my mom, she was the first host. Always with the door open for the unexpected guest. But a small restaurant like Osteria Francescana is much more than a restaurant. That's why it survives. That's why, you know, it's insane that in Modena, in Italy, you know, we have a place open 7 days a week, lunch and dinner. I don't even remember last time we lost a table of two people. You know, all is fully booked. All is fully booked.
No shows.
No shows is because some people, some Russian forgot that they had a reservation in Osteria, but they already paid. So, you know, that's the point. But, you know, for us, it's like Osteria is that small restaurant. It's like a Renaissance atelier, you know, in which we create culture every day. You know, the whole speech today is going to be about misery and noblesse. It's like a Renaissance atelier in which we create culture every day. Every day we walk into the kitchen with a big space open for poetry in our mind, in which we can jump and imagine everything. So we are ambassador of our agriculture. So we care about our farmer, fisherman, cheesemaker, our artisans. We are agent of tourism. You know, people are traveling for days, spend a couple of days and see what's going on in the area, the food valley, the motor valley, slow food, fast cars, you know, explore the cheese companies, buy some Parmigiano, buy the balsamic vinegar, the Lambrusco, explore the area. Training, you know, we have a couple of thousands of CV in waiting lists to come and work with us. And people come to Modena to learn how to learn how to make a fog out of a Parmigiano Reggiano, but at the end they learn a new way of thinking about the future, because they are involved in all the social projects, cooking in Food for Soul, but also making tortellini with Tortellante, or teach at AIW, the new project where Jessica, our chef at Gatto Verde, has with Caroline, and they integrate a single African mom into the society, into the culinary world. And then, at last, social responsibility. So you have five different ministry, culture, you know, agriculture, tourism, training and schools, and at the end, even social responsibility. You know, it's a big deal.
Exactly. This is a big deal, and it also shows that a restaurant, when it's so ambitious and when it has such social ambitions, it becomes better. It becomes better also for
the
guests.
But it's what I always say. It's like the most important ingredients for the chef of the future is culture. Or you have it or you don't have it. And but if you don't have it, you know, you can't express yourself.
Don't you think that it could be a potential danger for restaurants and the gastronomy, especially like the fine dining gastronomy of the future, that it's sometimes not enough focusing on social issues, on cultural stances as well?
I don't know. We raised the bar very high. And everyone has to confront with what we do. And, you know, like, it's a very difficult approach for the new generation, because probably they didn't get enough time to get deep into what we were saying. But the future generation, I see on my Instagram, you know, like 86% are under 40 years old. So they are all following me for what I do. Millions of people, they're following me for what I do, especially in social gesture. And I think the whole success of Osteria Francescana is because of that. You know, it's because, you know, we have the chef in 2025 is much more than the sum of his recipes. You know, it's
But is this the way to go?
To me? Yes, for sure. And I can see all my chefs, they work with us. Also, the people, they work, you know, in Osteria. They leave Osteria and they have a different approach to food. Not everyone, because there are some more acculturated than others. But a lot of especially young chef, yes. You know, I think about all the refettori. I think about Walter in Geneva. He's like, wow. And always thinking about the others, you know, like it's a big deal.
Is it the Gatto Verde, is it planned to become also a 3-star restaurant, or you want to keep it as the 1-star? How is it? What is the goal?
Question. I don't know what is planned. To me, it was like a revelation from what Jessica did. You know, I want to keep Jessica with me. Alain Ducasse asked her to go to Paris.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, but in front of me.
Okay.
You know, we are very good friends.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was very transparent. And I said, Jess, you know, we did together the whole breakfast in Casa Maria Luisa. Breakfast is becoming... You know, we got 3 Michelin stars with 3 Michelin keys, yeah. You know, from 0 to 3.
Oh, this is true. Just, you get the 3 Michelin keys at the Casa Maria Luisa.
And, you know,
true.
For everything, you know, like one of the 4 hotels in Italy with Michelin's keys and stars. And, you know, we, after breakfast, she got this idea of doing a barbecue to open Sunday lunch, reinvent something. Yeah. And the barbecue grow very slow, like a tree, with big roots. And when she was ready to and mature enough to express herself in a very interesting way. By chance, I was in an art gallery, very important art gallery, and there was this conceptual artist from the 80s, Mike Bidlow, that he was doing like the ready-made post Duchamp with all these paintings of Pollock, Jackson Pollock, Frank Stella, Andy Warhol, and repainted in a better way than the original, and with the title, with N-O-T, not Jackson Pollock, not... Okay. Frank Stella, not Andy Warhol. And I said, wow, this is so cool, so clever. What we are doing in Casa Maria Luisa is not barbecue. It's much more than barbecue. Because she is using 3 Michelin star, because she worked a decade in Osteria.
Yes.
So she used a 3 Michelin star technique and finish all the dishes with smokiness, a little bit of barbecue at 65 degrees, then grill, then Girarosto Tuscan style, or like a 500 degrees of grassy wood burn oven as pizza. So I was like, wow, this is incredible. 10 months, 2 Michelin star, 1 red and 1 green. You know, I was like so impressed. And this is, I don't know where is the limit, you know, but we got into the 50 best with our hotel. We got into the 50 best with Gatto Verde. So it's not about me. It's about all of us. Mm. But in this case, focus on Jessica.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
No, it's such a multidimensional house, right? I mean, you get the art experience. You get this breakfast.
The art experience is just insane. You know, when I see art lovers, they come in, and I look at their face, you know, like look at the faces, you know, what is that? That's a Julian Schnabel portrait of Jean-Michel Basquiat. You know, whoa, that's a Joseph Beuys portrait in Picture of Diamonds by Andy Warhol.
Yeah.
What the hell? Yeah, it's beautiful. Even in every single room is a unique. That's Lara. Eh? You know, I picked the art, but she's the one who designed the whole thing.
To make it come alive as well.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So Jessica stayed.
Jessica decided to stay, yes.
Okay.
And she's really focused on what she's doing.
Comes also clear is that you started expand in different countries, right? Tokyo, I think Dubai closed down.
Yeah.
End of the,
so I would not talk about Dubai because otherwise I had to talk about the attitude of some people, you know, in that area. So I'm going to skip that.
So we skip
but
that.
We, yes, thank you. But we move our stuff in Miami.
Yeah.
And so we moved Torno Subito in Miami and Torno Subito in Singapore. We kept the two, Singapore and Miami, two very refined place to have a good restaurant, but having fun.
Mm-hmm.
Then with Gucci, we opened, you know, four osteria by Massimo Bottura, in which we pick the chefs that they deserve to be the chef, to the chef.
Yeah.
And, you know, and to every single one of them, I said, express yourself, act local with local products. Extremely important to know every single farmer, fisherman, you know, from Santa Monica Farmers Market or Tsukiji Market. And, you know, but never forget who you are and where you come from. If you want to confront with me, my chat is here. So you chat with me and I'm giving you suggestion, you know, and like that, it's not just about me, it's about us. So this is the way to evolve. Us. And this is why we're like, we keep evolving and keep growing, you know. As in the refettorio, it's about us. In 10 years, we involve 140,000 volunteers and chefs from all over the world in the refettorio projects. Even there, because every restaurant that we open, we have the goal to open a refettorio. So now we have more refettorio than restaurants. You know, that's
it's true, actually.
That's a beautiful goal. That's a beautiful goal. Yeah.
I mean, you don't seem to get tired of what you do. How busy will be the next 10 years?
I don't know.
I mean,
it's like my daughter, she's 28. Finally, she quit Gucci and she came and worked with us. You know, it's almost 1 year that she's working with us. And
where? What does she do?
She's like... she worked for the first approach was breakfast.
Okay.
6 o'clock in the morning start, you know, especially January, yeah. February, less 10, you know, icy everywhere, you know.
It's so cold in Molinari.
No, it's like, it's very important for her to get like very aggressive approach to understand that our life is very difficult. And, but she got into the team very well, she's very humble. And I understood something incredible, that breakfast time with her approach, very mild, very low key, she can hear everyone feedback from the night before at Cavallino, Franceschetta, Francescana, Casa Maria Luigia. And you know, she can... you know, get into, you know,
the picture, and the see picture a little bit of everything. The
feeling, she learned more about who we are and how we approach to our job in 6 months than the 27 years that she was like just marginalized because she was working in another place. So that
this
was
is quite
amazing.
New that she's
quite new. She was working at marketing and communication at Gucci. Mm. Actually, the last campaign was a Yannick Sinner campaign. You know?
Okay, yeah,
that's the very important point. Now that she's in the office close to Alessandro, my right hand, and you know, she's like, she's doing very well. Yeah.
So there are no specific openings for the future, which
no,
you can
no, we
tell
can,
about.
We keep going like this. We want to consolidate all the time. With this, we are always open to persuasion.
Hmm.
We receive so many proposals, but you know, we're gonna say yes to just those that are deeply important. And that's it, you know. For example, to me, as soon as I got my hip replaced, the operation, you know, that really I was suffering a lot of pain for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. When I was ready in my mind to do it, I did it. And now I have all my energy back. And so I start traveling again as before. I just came back from Osaka, in which we did the whole Osaka, you know, Expo Italian Week. And the government, the governor of Osaka and the mayor of Osaka, they invite me there also to cook 1 week with, you know, in the most amazing, exclusive place in Osaka. You know, and, you know, I went crazy, you know, at the end of the week after, you know, overbooking, they said, please come back next year, please come back next year. These are the things that make me feel good. Today, first message I received for my birthday was from India. You know, the Leela Palace director sent me a picture of happy birthday from all the little girls from the foundation we support with events that we do in Delhi, because every year I dedicate 1 week to India. I don't know, it's so spiritual. I love it and I'll do it. And to me, it's nothing. I'm treating like a king. And, you know, I go there, I hug these ladies, I teach them how to free their minds and, you know, make them free to express themselves into canvas, into food, into, you know, whatever they want, and help them with the education and pay for the school. And also these people from the Leela Palace are deeply sensible on this, and you know, to help them to get a better life, you know. This is deep to talk about on the microphone, but you know, I hope I can inspire more chefs to do what I do.
Thank you so much,
Massimo. You're welcome.
For you having taken
welcome
this time and this openness from your part.
Thank you very much.
And enjoy your birthday.
All right, on stage. Juhu!
Und wir sehen und hören uns für die nächste, bei der nächsten Rolling Pin Podcast-Folge, meine Lieben.